Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
The UN's International Atomic Energy Agency, or the IAEA, last week adopted a resolution condemning Iran for its lack of cooperation on nuclear issues. The Iran's offer was rejected by the board, which collapsed a potential deal. Now, the IAEA and Iran are set to meet again today in Geneva to see if a new agreement can be reached. But if the talks prove to be unsuccessful, what is the future of the Iran nuclear deal, and how much is the standoff being influenced by current world political events? Well, to explain this and more, I'm joined now by Patrick Wintour, who is diplomatic editor with The Guardian. Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning to you.
Good to have you with us. So these talks ended last week with no agreement. How did we get to that point?
Well, relations between Iran and the West have been in a bad and worsening place for about 2 years or more. The West is angry about the way in which Iran funds what it regards as proxy forces in Lebanon and in Gaza, Hamas and Hezbollah. And they're also angry that Iran has been supplying weapons to Russia for use in Ukraine. But the kernel of the problem is that there's been a growing lack of cooperation between Iran and the body you just mentioned, the IAEA, about its nuclear program. Inspectors have been basically not being given access to key nuclear sites inside Iran. Mm-hmm. And Iran, for its own reasons, has been increasing the amount of highly enriched uranium that it is producing. And what there was an attempt last week to try to get back into a more virtuous circle whereby Iran promised to allow more inspectors in, and they also promised to set a cap on the amount of highly enriched uranium they produced. Now, unfortunately, or fortunately, whatever perspective, Europe decided that was not enough, and they've now asked the IAEA to produce a comprehensive report into Iran's compliance with the nuclear deal. And the significance, just to finish off, the significance of that would be that the next October, there would be a possibility that all the sanctions that used to be on Iran will be snapped back on, and then we'll be in a really bad place between the West and Iran.
Okay, and you had a really interesting conversation with the Iranian foreign minister, didn't you, where he said, we felt we had offered as much as we could or as much as they wanted at the IAEA, but he also said he felt that he had them on side, that he had a deal.
Yes, bizarrely, I went to see him in Lisbon, and he said to me that he'd spoken to the Director General personally of the IAEA, which is a man called Rafael Grossi, an Argentinian diplomat, and he thought Grossi was very happy with the kind of proposals that the Iranians had come forward with, and he hoped that Europe would listen to Grossi's advice, but they didn't. And behind some of this is manoeuvring and worry about what is going to be the American position when Donald Trump comes into office next in January.
So have you been able to figure out, sorry to interrupt you,
Patrick, not at all.
But have you been able to figure out what happened after the head of the IAEA had that conversation with Iran, where both sides, it would appear from what you're telling me, thought there was a deal? Who then blocked it, do you know?
Well, I'm taking this from the Iranians and therefore take it with a pinch of salt. But their view is that Europeans are so cross with Iran over what's happening in Ukraine. And it's certainly been true that the Iranians sold drones to Russia, that their kind of judgment has been clouded about what they're being offered on the nuclear program. Mm-hmm. And in particular, they're pointing to Germany as being the country that is taking the most hardline approach to Iran. It's just one extra point is that the president of Iran was elected this year amongst all the many elections, and he is a reformist, and he was elected on a ticket of trying to get these economic sanctions lifted. And they feel, the Iranians feel, that they never really managed to make any progress with the West as soon as Pezeshkian, the president, was elected, and that there's been a failure to listen, and that Europe is missing an opportunity to get back into this virtuous circle of negotiations with Iran.
So is there political jeopardy for the president of Iran and his government on that basis, given what they promised?
Yes, the foreign minister to whom I spoke, and then the Pezeshkian, and then another character, Javad Zarif, are all associated with the idea of the nuclear deal between the West and Iran working. And they say this is the way out of the cage, of which is what the Iranian economy is trapped in. Is this a more balanced relationship between West and East and sanctions being lifted? So if they aren't able to make progress on that front, using inverted commas hardliners inside Tehran, when there's big division within Iran, the hardliners will say you tried to this Iran nuclear deal route and it didn't work. And the foreign minister, when I spoke to him, also said very explicitly, look, there's a growing debate now inside Iran about whether we should have a nuclear bomb. Their position is that they only are seeking a civilian nuclear program, and there's a fatwa from the supreme leader saying there shouldn't be a nuclear bomb. But he was saying to me, look, this debate is changing and shifting inside my country, and it will be difficult to hold it back if we end up with the nuclear deal collapsing and sanctions being reimposed by the West.
Very painful sanctions, as we know. You mentioned earlier that the backdrop to all of this, of course, is Donald Trump back in the White House in January. So set the scene for us there, because it's no harm to remind us all of what he did in 2018 and his role in the IAEA at that time.
Yes, this is the source of the Iranian grievance, is that they painfully negotiated this nuclear deal in 2015, which prescribed what Iran could and couldn't do with its nuclear program, and then ensured this very large inspectorate was monitoring it. And then Donald Trump in 2018 pulled out the nuclear deal unilaterally. The Iranians then said to the Europeans, well, you've got to stick with the deal because you signed to it. You should continue to trade with us. And the Americans managed to put a sort of constructed sanctions in such a way that Europe felt it was too dangerous for them to trade with Iran. So Iran feels they never got any of the benefits of the nuclear deal. They got all the monitoring, but none of the alleviation of sanctions. And they have always felt that Europe has lacked a kind of gumption and a sense of independence from America. But the way in which America's sanctions operate, it can be very difficult for a company to trade with Iran and not risk being fined by America. And now what we're seeing is a group of hardliners in terms of approach to Iran being appointed by Donald Trump. The man who constructed the policy of maximum economic pressure on Iran, a man called Brian Hook, is in charge of the transition team in the State Department. So that's a sign of where the mood in the Trump administration is likely to be.
So what are we hearing about that mood, Patrick? Because it would seem, just piecing together from everything that you've told us, that the EU maybe is hedging until we get to clearly see what the strategy from the Americans will be after the inauguration of Donald Trump.
Yes. I mean, the one word that everyone associates with Donald Trump is unpredictability. Yeah. I think even the Iranians are hoping that somehow Trump will be more flexible than he was last time. But I personally don't see evidence for that at all. I think the only thing they would try and prevent happening is if Israel really went to war with Iran. I think that on balance, that's not what Donald Trump wants to do. He wants to use economic pressure, not military pressure, on Iran. And he thinks that Iran has been immeasurably weakened by what's happened in Lebanon and in Gaza, and that you can force Iran back to the negotiating table through economic pressure. They feel this is the Trump administration feel that the Biden team didn't put that economic pressure on, and they allowed Iran to sell oil to China in particular, and that's given them an income stream that they wouldn't have had otherwise.
Mm-hmm. So these talks then that are happening tomorrow in Geneva, are we expecting anything concrete to emerge? What are people telling you?
They're today.
They're today.
And The foreign minister described them to me as a brainstorming session. So I don't think they're looking for a kind of long communique, but I think they're each side are going to kind of probe each other to see if there's any flexibility, either about the Ukraine issue or about the nuclear issue, and whether Iran is sincere in trying to elect the inspectorate from the IEA back in, and that they are willing to constrain the program, but in return, the Iranians are going to want some kind of lifting of economic sanctions. My sense of it is that there just isn't enough common ground, unfortunately, mm-hmm. between the two sides.
And your chat or your interview that you had with the Iranian foreign minister.
Very formal interview.
He did say to you, oh, I offered all of these things and they wouldn't accept it. But did you get the sense that he is inflexible in his position overall?
Well, Iranians are the toughest of negotiators, and they're hardly likely to succumb in face of my questioning. He said the options are cooperation or confrontation. We've made a genuine offer. It could lead to a virtuous cycle. So that was the kind of program that he was trying to put forward. And he was saying, we haven't sold any ballistic missiles to Russia, but that... doesn't cover the fact that they've obviously sold drones and other equipment to Russia.
See, a lot of this, I mean, we're going to have a jigsaw effect here, aren't we? Because Donald Trump has promised to end the war in Ukraine.
Mm.
So, I mean, this is the big problem that the EU has with Iran. You know, well, it's top of the list of big problems. You know, their intervention in terms of supplying weapons, as you've explained to us, to Russia. Mm. So what Trump does in that regard might have an impact on this situation.
Yes, I mean, if Trump just did say very bluntly to Zelensky, the Ukrainian president, you know, you're going to have to give up territory. We're not going to support you any longer unless you accept that, Ukraine is going to be dismembered. Then the war is in, from Ukraine's point of view, is in a really bad place. And they will go back to the European Union and say, can you support us even more? And the reality is, I don't think the European Union has got sufficient funds, political will, or ammunition to help Ukraine to fight that war on its own. So there will have to be some kind of compromise. But I don't think, you know, the Iranian issue about the nuclear program remains, regardless of whatever the outcome of the war in Ukraine is, because the West is determined that Iran doesn't have its own nuclear weapon. And there are various different kind of prognostications about how close Iran is to having that nuclear weapon, but this was described as breakout. But certainly the stockpile of enriched uranium that they've now gathered puts them in very close to having such a weapon.
Well, Patrick, it's great to have it all explained to us. So many thanks for joining us this morning on the programme. Whatever the complex permutations of it all, at least we know where we stand now. Thank you so much, Patrick Wintour, diplomatic editor with The Guardian there. Now, if you're looking for somewhere to enjoy the winter solstice next month, which is only coming up on Sunday, Anthony Murphy, author and curator of Mythical Ireland, will join me next with some great ideas.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.